So today on Movie Wallahs, we're going to talk about the new movie, Bone Tomahawk. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Hello, it's Yazdi.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
We have a special guest today on our podcast. Yazdi, I'll let you do the introductions because I'm so bad at them.
Absolutely. We are so thrilled to have Beth Accomando with us as a special guest. And all of you, at least who is based in San Diego, should be very, very familiar with Beth. But for those who are not, Beth is the lead film critic for KPBS NPR. And she, in fact, does all arts coverage, not just for film, as part of KPBS. She hosts her own Cinema Junkies podcast for NPR, in which she does reviews, interviews, features. It's really great. Put it on your podcast list right now. She also writes for cinemajunkies.net. And she has been the past president of the San Diego Film Critics Society and former education chairperson for the San Diego Film Critics Society. Beth is a member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association and Online Film Critics Association. And she's been a film critic for 25 plus years.
Wow.
Covering...
I'm old is what that means.
No, you're not. You're seasoned. Covering all manner of cinema as well as pop culture for National Public Radio. And Public Radio International is the world. So again, I'm thrilled beyond words to
Absolutely.
Have you.
Absolutely.
Welcome,
and now you
Beth.
Can add Movie Wallahs to your CV.
Yes.
More important than anything. No, seriously, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you for joining us.
Sure. Anytime I can talk about movies, it's a good time.
So one of the things that we always do for our listeners is anytime we get a guest, we try and give everyone just a sense of who you are as a film critic, kind of things that you like. And it's really a spin on the whole Desert Island mm-hmm. Discs theme. So if you were marooned on a desert island, what movies would you take with you?
See, that was key, because when you said Desert Island Disc, I was wondering, how did I get to the island? Because that makes a difference. Like, if I went there willingly, you know, on a cruise and could get off whenever I wanted, that's different. But marooned, it would have to be... These are not necessarily films for a time capsule that, you know, I'd want to save, but mm-hmm. these are the films that if I'm stuck somewhere, I would watch repeatedly.
You are waiting right.
Well, you'd have,
yes.
Yes.
you'd
have to, yes.
That
yes.
could put them on a loop. So for that, I would need kind of a little spectrum of films, but I would definitely need something like The Adventures of Robin Hood with Errol Flynn.
Mm. Yes. Fantastic.
Because he's gorgeous. The cinematography, the colors are like the brightest colors you've ever seen. I would need King Kong, the original one, because that's my... I don't like love stories, but I love that. That's a love story to me. Like, mm-hmm. that's a Valentine's Day movie. I would also need probably something like The Godfather.
Yes.
Hard-boiled. Because you need some John Woo action, because you know you're going to have one of those bad days where you wake up and you're pissed at the world and you want to see people just
beat the life out.
Slamming things and shooting up. I'd need something from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And of course, then I'd also need a Marx Brothers film. Like Duck Soup, I think I would probably take. That's wonderful. I'd have to have a film noir, at least something dark and delicious, like Out of the Past. And, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Just in case I was marooned on a zombie-infested island.
That would de-scarify it for you.
Yeah. Shaun is just wonderful. You can watch that film over and over and over again. And another over and over again film would be Big Trouble in Little China.
Love that movie.
So
also very Kurt Russell. Yes.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Kurt
very
Russell
apt.
Is so underappreciated.
He is, yeah.
He is really underappreciated. Gosh, there's so many. It's hard. I couldn't imagine getting marooned without suitcases full of movies, because whatever my mood is, it requires a different film.
Absolutely.
You know, there's the day you come home from work and you're just tired and exhausted and mad at something, and you go like, okay, that's a John Wayne movie. You need action. You need some really good action. And then there's other days where it's raining out and you want to film to like cozy up on the couch,
yeah,
with a cup of hot cocoa. And then it's like, oh, maybe Empire Strikes Back. And,
yeah.
You know?
That's a really good selection. I like the diversity.
Yeah. So yeah, because yeah, if you have too much of the same stuff, I mean, I really like a broad spectrum of films.
Yeah.
I just like them to be good.
Yeah.
That's really the only, I mean, when I go to a movie, I want that, I want my jaw to drop down and be in awe and just go like, this is amazing. And that's what I see,
yeah,
when I go to a film. And so those are the kind of films that...
Very nice.
But yeah, perfect. I could go on forever on film choices, but that would get me through. Maybe A Hard Day's Night, too.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, Richard Lester is an underappreciated director. He did Three Musketeers and Robin and Marian. He's wonderful, too.
And always good to have a musical, even though that's not a traditional musical.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think anybody who really loves movies uses movies as therapy. I cannot think of not having movies when I'm very sad or when I'm very happy or when I'm very disgusted or angry, and they're just there. And books, you know, it's mm-hmm. I think people use movies as therapy. Maybe I don't want to make too much of it.
No, for sure.
I do.
Yeah. And there are some movies that even if you're having the worst day ever, you can watch it even from the middle and it just puts a huge smile on your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Bedazzled, Rashmi.
Like mine is Bedazzled. That is my guilty pleasure. No. I actually like the
Missing Elliot. Oh, my God.
It's her guilty pleasure. But
it's really my guilty pleasure.
I can't help but bring it up.
Dudley Moore. I know, but I just... Brendan Fraser is just...
I know,
but Brendan Fraser is just such a silly face to look at that I just love him in all the different...
You've lost all respect for Rashmi.
I know.
I can see it in your face.
Peter Cook was just the best devil.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't love it for Liz Hurley. I like it for Brendan Fraser, if that saves me any credibility.
So should we jump into our movie?
Why don't we? Yes. So our movie of the week is Bone Tomahawk. And Beth, maybe you could just give us a little background and tell us a little bit about this movie.
I had heard about Bone Tomahawk. It's a 2015 release. I had heard about it and desperately wanted to show it in San Diego. And I ended up traveling all the way to Wales to the Abattoir Horror Film Festival to actually get a chance to see it. And it floored me. It's an amazing Western. It's very simple, it goes for very classic kind of genre trappings of the Western. And so Kurt Russell is your very level-headed, kind of durable deputy or sheriff.
Sure.
And he's faced with this situation. This young woman doctor has been taken by, they're not quite sure what, and that's part of what the film gets into. So he, her husband, this man who kind of is sweet on her, and his seemingly kind of Looney Tunes decrepit assistant deputy all band together and decide that they're going to go off to find her. And so the majority of the film, it's a slow burn. Majority of the film is them traveling to get to a destination. And it's a film that ends up mixing Western and horror in a very unexpected sort of way. So it's a film where it really pays off. And if you see, it's over 2 hours long. Some people go like, it's a slow burn. And when it hits that point where it suddenly ramps up super fast and you're just taken aback by it, it was my favorite film at the Abattoir Festival.
I have to ask you about that because that's not a film festival that we've been to or heard of. So the
Abattoir. And I love that it's called the Abattoir.
That just sounds awesome.
Yes, it's in Wales and it's been going on. It just had its 10th anniversary. I believe it was the 10th anniversary, yes. And it's very small. It's not a big place. It takes place on a campus. So it's in an art center. And they have multiple venues there. This past year, they actually had a concert with Fabio Frizzi, the composer, the Italian composer. Mm. And then they run, I think it's about just under a week's worth of films. But they pick them very carefully. And they try to bring guests in. Mm-hmm. And they try to have a nice diverse range of films. You know, it's by no means the biggest horror festival around, but I have friends who live in Wales. And so when I go over there, I get to stay at their place for free.
It's convenient, yes.
And it's easy. It's a really cozy feeling festival because when they have guests, it's not like they're limoed in and they're up on some big stage and the chances of you ever chatting with them are next to nothing. you know, everybody's kind of there partaking. And they had Vincent Price's daughter there this year.
Fantastic.
And they actually hosted a dinner made from his cookbook, where they served food that he had in his cookbook. And then she was there at the dinner, and then they ran trailers all through the movie. So there are people who really love horror and they understand it. And it's great.
For a long time, just been advocating that people go to film festivals.
Because
I think it's one of those things that, you know, we didn't really go to a lot of them prior to doing the podcast, but it's such a great thing if you love movies, like to be in that environment. So that one sounds like an absolute blast.
Oh, it's wonderful. I think that was my third time.
Fantastic.
So. Very nice. So the Abattoir Film Festival in Wales.
Yep.
Very nice.
And I know we're here to talk more about Bone Tomahawk, but since we're talking about horror film festivals, Beth, you want to talk us about an upcoming horror film festival that you are very involved with, organizing here in San Diego at the Digital Gym?
Yes, I'm part of a volunteer group. We call ourselves the Film Geeks at the Digital Gym Cinema. Miguel Rodriguez, who runs Horrible Imaginings, and Michael McQuiggan, who's at Film Out. We're kind of the lead people involved in this. And basically what we wanted to do is bring films that might not otherwise play in San Diego to a venue. And because the Digital Gym is this little micro cinema, it's only 46 seats, we figured it's less of a financial risk to have a space like that where the Digital Gym's wonderful. They kind of let us have it as our living room. And they're like, what do you want to show? Oh, fine. Yeah, go for it. So last year we showed a year-long series of Universal Monsters. And this year we're doing a year-long series of Hammer Horror, which we call it a full flight of B&B, which is Babes and Blood, or if you want to be more explicit, Boobs and Blood is a lot of what goes on there.
Yes. But that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ian Joe's face is just lighted up. Yeah.
So, and it's also Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee. We're showing Curse of the Werewolf, Horror of Dracula, Curse of Frankenstein. So it's a year-long tribute to Hammer Horror, and there's going to be... We missed January because they're installing DCP, which is a type of projection at the Digital Gym. And so we're starting in February, and we're going to have still 12 films, two in October, but basically a film a month on Sunday afternoons. And right now you can go and get VIP passes, which you get a free T-shirt, and you get some other perks, buttons from all the films, and discounted tickets. But we like to have kind of a nice family feeling at the Digital Gym. I mean, there's a lot of times where someone will walk in late to a screening and we know them by their first name and we're like, oh, come on, Michael, you know, get your seat, sit down. Or so-and-so, turn off your phone. But it's a feeling where we like to have people who really love movies like we do and like to come and talk about them and hang out after. And a lot of times we'll have food or drink and things like that. But this year it's going to be Hammer Horror, and we're really looking forward. Because last year was all black and white. Actually one color film, but all black, mostly black and white, Universal Monsters. And now we're going to have this bold, vivid color of Hammer Horror bleeding off the screen.
Fantastic.
So we've already purchased a pass, and you know, for all those of you in San Diego, come on.
What a treat.
Come on, what a treat. What are you waiting for? It's a Sunday afternoon. You know, you can find time for it. And you know, it's such a cool thing to do. It's kind of fun and it's hipster and cool, and you know,
if you like movies as much, right?
It's just, and you know, you can have a dinner afterwards, you know, and there's so many fun places you can eat around where the Digital Gym is. So come on, make a Sunday afternoon out of it.
And our pass system is very flexible too, because if you can't use your pass, we're not one of those groups that's like, oh, it's non-transferable. So you get a pass and you get to punch out each film program as you go along. And if you can't go, you can hand your pass to someone else to go that day, and
that's
they can
brilliant.
Use it. We also have a 6-pack of passes, and basically you could bring 6 people to one film. You can go to 6 different films. You can go to...
So cool.
You've removed every possible argument that somebody might have to purchase a pass. I think that's brilliant.
And you get cheaper tickets, and you get this great shirt that a local artist, John Grunes, designed for us. And it's fun. And it has a nice community feeling when we had the Universal Monsters. It was great because it was the same people coming every week, and we could all talk about films and about the ones that we remembered. And we like, oh, we never saw this one. Or, oh, I remember seeing this one for the first time. And people were bringing their kids, introducing them to some of these movies.
Oh, I love that.
And one little kid, oh, I forgot whose son it was, because there were a couple of young kids who came each time, but one of them during the Wolfman was going, this is really sad.
Now, Yazdi has the t-shirt, and so we're going to try and take a picture of it when you get it. Well,
yeah, when we get it, yes.
And we can put it on our Instagram.
Definitely.
Which we never do. But we will. We'll try. We'll try and update our Instagram.
What a great opportunity to see those films in the theatre environment. And we, you know, I feel very strongly that movies need to be seen in theatres. I mean, we have a nice setup downstairs. We have a, you know, big screen TV. But it's not the same. So, I mean, what a wonderful opportunity to see this kind of stuff in the right environment as intended.
And it's not just the big screen, but it's that community feeling. Yeah. It's
especially with horror.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It's that everybody gasping together.
Yeah. The nervous laughter.
Yeah, or the, gee, don't open
don't
that
open
door.
The door.
Yeah. Don't go in there.
Don't go into the cellar.
It's part of that community feeling that you have. You're sitting in the dark all together, and it just makes it better. Not that you can't watch a film like that and have fun, but there's something about that group environment that makes it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Great. And so folks can go online and buy the passes?
Yeah, right now the best place to go for information is our Facebook page. So we have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thefilmgeeks. So you can go online there, and that's where we update everything. We'll have links up there, and you can find all the information about times, the exact film titles, the dates that we're showing everything, and we'll have Bone Tomahawk will be going up shortly. We just lock that in, so we'll have ticket information on there soon.
Terrific. I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes to that.
Thank you.
Excellent.
So on to the review of Bone Tomahawk then. So Beth is our guest. Why don't you go first? So what did you think of the movie?
It was amazing. It's funny because it's coming out the same. It came out the same year that Hateful Eight did, which got a lot of attention because Quentin Tarantino gets a lot of attention, and he made this a big, it's the road show of Hateful Eight, and it's 70mm.
Glorious.
Yeah. And not to take anything away from that film, I enjoyed that. But to me, I was a little disappointed in that it wasn't really, I didn't feel it was a classic Western. It felt almost more like some drawing room murder mystery kind of thing. Because once you get locked in, once you get locked into that room, it's all about like kind of who did what. So I had all my high hopes for like some big spaghetti Western, you know, Ennio Morricone was doing the music, and it's not fair to, you know, force a film to live up to your personal expectations. So I enjoyed it, but I was a little disappointed. But I had seen Bone Tomahawk, which also has Kurt Russell. He's in both of them.
Yep.
And I'm not particularly a huge fan of Westerns, but to me, this one just like summed up everything that made a great Western. And it played up on the traditional elements in a perfect way, not in a way like I don't have any ideas, that's why I'm doing this, but in a way of like I understand where this tradition is rooted in, and here are the elements that we really love about the genre that we want to see. And the thing that impressed me the most is there were a few people at the festival who complained that it was slow, but what I loved,
we'll talk about that. Yeah.
What I loved about it was that it took its time and it let the characters develop. And what happened, and this is what a lot of horror films forget to do, which is to make you care for the people that you're engaged with, because if you don't care, in films like Saw and the Friday the 13th films, which have their own element of joy, but you're not invested in the characters and you don't really care what happens to them. You're more interested in like, oh, how crazy can the kills get? Right. But in this one, you're traveling along with them and you don't even realize how attached you're getting to them because it's very kind of casual. And then suddenly when it starts to ramp up, suddenly you feel this like, oh my God, I really care like, about
don't
these
die.
People.
Don't die.
I don't want anything to happen to them. And so the tension, you build tension like that because you actually care about who these people are. So there's real tension that comes at the end that you are like on the edge of your seat where, you know, you're kind of like leaning back during a good chunk of it. Cause it's, like I said, it almost throws you off the scent by kind of going like, we're going to lull you into this little kind of sense of forgetting where they're going.
Let's come back to the pacing, because I think that's one of the things that I really wanted to talk about the movie. But Yazdi, what did you kind of get the sense for? How did you feel about this?
I think it's marvelous. I mean, I, you know, like you, Beth, you know, the Western is not my favorite genre. But I think it's what we were saying earlier. Ultimately, it comes down to whether a film is good or not, regardless of genre. And I think this is a very good film for a couple of reasons. One is I think the script is, you know, too clever by half, but it's absolutely on a minute-by-minute basis just a riot. I mean, honestly, I, unlike The Hateful Eight, I could sit and listen to Kurt Russell talk like the sheriff for the next 4 hours. I just could. I mean, the script is, I mean, the script gives him such a nice sense of person. And, you know, and sometimes it's just how he says it, or, you know, so that comes down to the acting as well. I mean, great acting. Somebody like Richard Jenkins has been underappreciated for so long. I mean, he's so good in every movie, and yet I don't know if he's ever been as good as he is here.
And the character, what's so great about his character is, initially, when you first meet him, you almost dismiss him because he seems like kind of a doddering old man. You're not sure if he's drunk, maybe, or just kind of entering some sort of Alzheimer dementia kind of. So you kind of dismiss him a little bit. And as they go on this journey, you kind of think, wait a minute, he's pretty smart and he kind of knows
he
the
has
score.
A wisdom.
And exactly.
By the time we got to Act Three, I was in love with him. I mean, he was, I think, probably my favorite element in the movie. But
for me, he stole the show. I think Richard Jenkins is the unsung hero in this movie. I absolutely loved his performance. But for me, this is like the perfect horror-y. It's just so fun. And I think, like you, Yazdi, and like you, Beth, I don't really enjoy Westerns that much either. But what really impressed me about this one was its authenticity in the language that it uses. And then the other thing is, I mean, there is some fantastic humor, which is why I called it a horror-y. I mean, I wrote down two lines. One is, it's not a poem. It's just the emotions I was feeling at the time, which one of the characters says. And then this brilliant scene around reading in the bathtub. I mean, in a movie do you ever get such a great scene between two manly men about reading in the bathtub? It's just genius. And it had this real Coen brothers, almost Tarantino-esque-ness about it without being too over the top, I feel.
I mean, I think those particular elements are brought around by the violence. And I think the prologue set me up for what I was going to see in the rest of the movie. I think tonally, it was really hard for me to kind of settle in for the first few minutes or so because I couldn't quite grasp the tone. But as soon as I kind of settled into what this was actually trying to do, to be, it's not completely absurd in the way that a Coen Brothers film might be, but there are these really great moments in there that point out some of the absurdity in some of the situations. So it was really good fun ride. I mean, I did want to talk about the pacing primarily because I think it may be a little slow for some people, but I really beg you to give the movie a chance because it is so measured in the way that it propels the story forward. And you're never, because we have that prologue at the beginning that kind of telegraphs these monsters around, I always had this unease around every scene when they were basically in the wilderness making their journey. I had this huge sense of unease around every time it got dark, I thought something horrible was going to happen to them. And that's one of the beautiful things about the movie. I think it really creates that sense of dread that that makes it very effective.
Yeah.
And maybe you didn't get that, but
no,
I
liked it.
I was
really
constantly
liked
worried for them around the campfire.
I was too, and I was observing us watching it. I could see that when those bits came up, we would like say something silly or like something random.
Just to deflate the tension.
Just to deflate the tension, which was interesting, which we don't normally do in a cinema. But
So I think some might consider this slow, but I don't think there's an unnecessary scene in the movie. There are many slow movies I watch where I was like, well, that was just a filler. That didn't add anything. It didn't add to the character. It just seemed like something, it seemed like an indulgence. I don't think there's a scene here which is an indulgence. I think every scene here is very purposeful. And like you said earlier, I mean, until you said it, I didn't even realize it. It's very purposefully, you know, building these characters, taking its time so that you grow to develop some kind of affection for them. And then there's more at stake. But I was completely 100% engaged through the whole thing. And more than engaged, just kind of thrilled, a little bit giddy even.
Yeah, because again, so few films do this well, but it uses dialogue to reveal these characters. These little kind of mm-hmm. off-the-wall vignettes that Richard Jenkins tells that you think are totally meaningless, and yet always seem to come back around to something that makes perfect sense. And Kurt Russell, again, another underappreciated yeah. actor. He's so good. Hell, his mustache alone deserves yeah. an award more than Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant. Just the mustache. But he's so good, and he knows how to... He doesn't have to ham it up. He doesn't have to yeah. overplay. Everything is just this kind of low-key, naturalistic... He's obviously this man who's been in this job for a long time, knows how to handle it.
Seen everything. Yeah. yeah.
And knows, like, how to stay calm so that others around you yes. stay calm. Because you know that you're going to be in situations where that's going to be very important. Yeah. And it's... I was so upset that he didn't get nominated. And you guys, as critics, you get award screeners and stuff too. And you know, there's some studios that really push people, and you'll get a screener. You'll get, I mean, the Danish Girl sent flowers to us. And you know, so you know that the studios are pushing some people. And then Bone Tomahawk, I think I got one email with a screening link, and that was it. And it was like late in the voting period as well. And I'm thinking,
yeah,
people aren't gonna.
They should have sent out these chocolates. I have yes. in front of me a little bag of white chocolate bones with Bone Tomahawk on there. I think they're going to be giveaways.
Right? Yes, I make desserts themed to movies, and so this is the bag of bones tomahawk.
They're
and
adorable. So if you can say that about a bag of bones,
they look adorable. I love this. Maybe that would have. Yes, yeah, would have swayed my vote.
But it really upset me that he didn't even get considered.
I mean, Beth, you've been, you know, talking about reviewing movies for a long time. But I mean, we on our podcast, you know, we get on our soapbox all the time about how completely broken the distribution system is. I mean, I do not understand when, even within horror, absolute ridiculous stuff shows up in multiplexes, you know, every month. And yet a movie as good as this
yeah.
has difficulty even getting distribution. I mean, it has not been distributed in San Diego to date. And then the studio obviously did not push for them. I think mm-hmm. if they made the right push, then they could have gotten the right awards consideration. I mean, I would have gladly nominated Richard Jenkins for Best Supporting Actor, you mm-hmm. know, over anybody else this year.
And, I agree.
And even picked him. So it's really a shame that this movie's kind of caught in this ether of, you know, neither here nor there. And I wish it had somehow caught on by word of mouth, gotten some yeah. distribution, you know, even opened at a few smaller cinemas where word would have gotten around and people would have come around and embraced it.
I agree. I mean, it's interesting to me, even some of the themes that it looks at, like the fact that the woman is the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's really progressive mm-hmm. for that time of life. And I was kind of like, wow, this is cool.
And also, you know, they're going to rescue her, but she's not.
She's no yeah. damsel.
Yes.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, screaming or, you know, she's somebody who's very confident of herself and even in a horrible situation still maintains a sense of calm and intelligence and is a really interesting character. And yeah. all the characters, like I said, it's playing off of familiar types that you've seen in Westerns, but they all have a little bit of a twist to them. And yeah. so that it makes them, they fit into the genre, but they also feel a little more modern too.
Now, this is the first time writer-director, right?
S. Craig Zeller. He's done a couple of other films, but nothing of real note. I mean, nothing that grabbed anybody's attention. But this is his first big, I guess,
you know,
yeah, feature with mm-hmm. stars in it that people would recognize and highly commendable.
Yeah, I mean, really, the film was very technically well put together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it felt well shot. The tension, I think, is not there by accident. And, you know, the script, I think we've all commented on some of the lines in the script. It is really, you know, very accomplished work here for somebody who's out there for the first time with a cast like this.
And I think it has an appreciation of where the genre has been. And
well, which one? Western or horror?
Western. I think it's linked more closely to Western yeah. than to horror. The horror is a really nice twist at the end, but it reminds me of
when High Noon had come out, Howard mm-hmm. Hawks was annoyed because he says, oh, come on, if a sheriff was offered help by, and I think he refuses the help of a young boy, a drunk, and an old man, I think, are the three that he refuses. And so Howard Hawks made, and I always forget, he made like two films like exactly the same. I think it was Rio Bravo and El Dorado, and I can never remember which came first. But he basically made a film to say, like, I'm going to show you. And so he has John Wayne take the help of a drunk, which was Dean Martin, a young kid, which was Ricky Nelson. And then I think there was a third. So this film, too, gives me this sense of playing off of this history we have of the Western, of which are the characters that we assume are kind of the strong characters, which are the characters that you tend to dismiss. And I don't want to say anything about right. how it plays with those, mm-hmm. but I think there's an interesting use of our familiarity with the genre and with what other filmmakers have done, and then how they kind of... Because at the end, you are surprised by certain things that happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Certain things you expect don't, and... It's great.
Yeah. So one of the things that's interesting to me is in 2015, we've had three Westerns, which is Hateful Eight, Slow Western, now Bone Tomahawk. Interesting. Do you think Westerns are getting a revival?
I don't know. They've never completely died away. We've had films like Unforgiven.
Yeah, True Grit.
Yeah, so they're one of the few really American genres. So I think Westerns encapsulate these things that Americans want to admire but don't actually like in the real world, which is mm-hmm. the loner, the person who goes kind of against the establishment, the one who kind of blazes their own trail. But they don't really like that in the real world. I mean, at work, in daily life, you don't really...
celebrate the loner.
Yeah,
yes.
the loner or collaboration the person, or the person who yeah. kind of, says, like, I'm going to go do my own thing. I don't care what the rest of you are doing. It's like yeah. there's this disconnect between what Americans tend to admire and hold up in their art and what they actually do. So I don't think they've gotten, but I think for a lot of filmmakers, I think it's an appealing genre. Yeah. You have this sense of the landscape and,
adversity.
Tarantino is definitely playing off of, to a degree, the mm-hmm. Sergio Leone style Westerns, although yeah. I think he actually did a better job of it with Kill Bill 2. Was yes. closer to his Italian spaghetti mm-hmm. Western than Hateful Eight,
yeah.
even though there were kind of some inklings of that. So I think it's an appealing genre for that. You've got the landscape, you've got these kind of very primal elements involved. So,
yeah.
I think it's a setting which allows filmmakers to kind of play on things more easily. Certain things like the honor amongst men.
Yeah.
And, the need to rely on a few other people to fight, an impossibly insurmountable enemy. So there's something very, extreme about the Western genre.
Yeah.
And I think it allows people who write a particular way
to kind of play with those themes. Yeah, elements too. Yeah. I mean, I think of like The Revenant, which isn't really a Western, but
in some ways it is.
I guess it is in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I took it to be more of that. I mean, the one thing with Westerns, I mean, I would love to see a resurgence in them. I think they can be a hard sell for some audiences. Mm-hmm. I speak to people and all the time about movies at work, and a lot of people go, yeah, I like most kind of movies, but don't really like Westerns. And it's such a frustrating thing to hear, because they're not in terms of a genre, it's not something you should just write off completely. There are good and bad films in any genre, and Westerns mm-hmm. are no exception.
Well, and also we've had a little bit of the feminist Western. There was The Keeping Room, which had Britt Marling, and we just had Natalie Portman in
Jane Got a Gun.
Yeah. So there, I think there's a way of looking at those Westerns and figuring out, is there a way we can kind of mm-hmm. reimagine them and give them a new spin?
Yeah.
And I think Bone Tomahawk definitely falls in line with that
yeah.
in terms of reimagining. I can see this filmmaker making his own kind of product, but standing on the shoulders of, everybody else before him. I mean, in the broken leg agony of the Patrick Wilson character, I saw a lot of Mr. Orange from Reservoir Dogs. I don't know. So it seems like he is definitely you know, very taken with Tarantino, and we talked about the Coen brothers.
At one point, a Mexican standoff in a strange way, which is unexpected, which I thought was.
But it doesn't feel derivative.
No, not derivative at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on this one?
No, I think people should
go see it.
Go see this one.
And again, for San Diego people, this will be the one and only time you will get to see Bone Tomahawk on the big screen. And it's going to happen on February the 21st at 3 p.m. On a Sunday at the Digital Gym. And you should absolutely...
Get yourself there.
Get yourself there.
I'm definitely going to watch it again on the big screen.
Yeah, it's available online streaming, but I know a few friends of mine who couldn't wait to see it and saw it, and they kind of regretted that that was their first experience of it. Because it's a film that plays really well on a big screen and with an audience, because you do get that sense of people falling in with these characters. And with a horror film too, you get those moments of...
Well, I want to hear the dialogue again, because it's so funny, and I'm sure I was laughing in my head so loudly and even out loud that I missed the next part of the dialogue that came. So I want to go back and watch it again to make sure that I've really got everything.
Yeah, and all those people who complain that cinema's gone to seed and there's nothing good to watch. go, please. Yeah. There is. There is good cinema out there. Here's your opportunity. Support your local film scene. Go watch Bone Tomahawk. Don't make me beg. I'm begging. Go see it. Okay.
Terrific. Well, Beth, thank you for coming to Movie Well Us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Thank you.
We hope to get you back some other time. I think it'll be... you know where we are now.
So. Yes. Well, and I'm constantly doing movie events, so there's plenty more to come.
Absolutely. We hope to see you again in that chair. Very soon. Thank
you for our chocolate bones.
Yes.
Which we will also take a picture of and try and...
But let the record state they were in no way, shape or form a bribery for a good review. And even if they were, the film earned a good review anyway.
These are actually the test chocolates for what we'll be offering with the VIP ticketing. So...
Terrific.
Very nice. Excellent. Thank you so much, Beth.
Thank you.
So, as always, mail at moviewellos.com for your comments. Let us know what you think of this movie. Get out there. Let us know if you make the movie and what you thought of this review. Twitter.com/moviewellos, Facebook.com/moviewellos as well. There are lots of ways to interact with us, so please do so. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me.
And me.